Thomas Hart Benton is one of the most well-known American artists from the first half of the last century. His interpretations of American form, its people, its traditions, and its music can be seen in museums, state capitals, and other public spaces. Leo Mazow, an associate professor of American art history in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, has studied Thomas Hart Benton and written the book Thomas Hart Benton and the American Sound, published by Penn State Press. This spring, Mazow was awarded the Charles C. Eldridge Prize for Distinguished Scholarship in American Art from the Smithsonian. He says Benton was an artist, a teacher, a musician, and possessed a healthy dose of self-confidence. In short, a complicated man. Recently, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked to Leo Mazow about the book. Kyle asked him about the final word in the book's title, sound, not a word generally associated with two-dimensional art.
Thomas Hart Benton came from a long line of politicians who were sort of obsessed with the idea of reaching out to the people and recording the people's experiences as they went off to Washington, D.C. to represent them. And they took quite literally cliches like the voice of the people. Benton, like others of his generation, were afraid that with the relentless pace of modern life and technology, the voice of the people, in both a cliche and a very literal sense, would get lost. And he saw it as his duty to do exactly what his father and great uncle had achieved. His great uncle was one of the first major the first important politician from Missouri, named Senator Thomas Hart Benton, for whom he's obviously named. And his father, Maecenas Benton, was a five-term serving congressman from southwest Missouri, think Springfield, Neosho, Joplin. And they, rightly or wrongly, saw themselves as representing the people, a phrase that you today would need to put in quotation marks because, you know, what does that mean? But for them, it meant non-urban constituencies. It meant individuals who benefited from the new modern ways but kept the old sacrosanct folkways intact. And Benton's work represents individuals from the lower Midwest and the Midwest. And it also often shows those individuals playing time-honored folk songs, or what it shows is character likenesses from Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas, Minnesota, but often playing folk songs and giving them a sort of voice. Now, what does that mean, to give a voice in a painting? Well, he literally would title the work after the folk song, and even in cases where he didn't, you even there still had passages, illustrations of passages from the lyrics. And those are one ways he kept their voice alive. Later in life, Tom Benton was asked about his art, and he said that he wanted to preserve the sad twang of mountain voices. And he did that up until his very last commission, which was a mural for the Country Music Foundation in Nashville, called The Sources of Country Music. And even there, he's keeping these sources alive, or so he says.
And there are other murals. I think of Arts of the South. It almost makes sound when you look at it.
Benton was keenly attuned to the idea of synesthesia, which is that something in one medium can evoke the effects of another. Benton knew that there were certain painterly devices, certain ways of mark making, certain ways of modeling paint on the canvas or on the side of a building if he was doing a tempera mural that could evoke sound. There were certain things, certain angles that might evoke a staccato rhythm. There are others that might bring out a smooth tone. He was very aware that it may be simply a verbal thing, it may all be in our heads, but certain passages, either we've been taught this or somehow we just know it, certain passages are euphonious, certain ones are cacophonous. Mm-hmm. And he spent a lot of his time pushing the expressive possibilities of just what the heck that might mean.
Benton also had a connection to radio, didn't he?
Yeah. Benton was very quick to appropriate mass media technology and his place within it. Radio, you know, is not really around till, I guess, the first commercial stations are around. I think Pittsburgh's KDKA is the first.
Right.
Is the first. Well, it's not long after that that Benton could be heard on several so-called universities of the air.
Mm-hmm.
From the very inception of radio's theorists, practitioners, those making money off of it, and educators were concerned about just what public good the radio would provide. Here we sit at KUAF.
We still have these conversations.
So we can sort of take that for granted now. But there was a very large drive on the part of broadcasters, NBC in particular, but other networks as well, to enlist the radio as an educational medium. And perhaps most famously, Benton was very closely involved with a radio program very popular that aired on NBC in 1939 and 1940 called Art for Your Sake.
Is an interesting concept.
Oh, yeah. And Art for Your Sake, and I think KUAF ought to take over the mantle here. It was a little overambitious, perhaps. You'd be a subscriber to the radio program, and in the mail you would receive a offset color reproduction of a painting by Benton or Michelangelo, and
right.
Benton thought he was at about that level. And at 7:30 p.m. over these stations on the National Broadcasting Company network, you would be told to pull out your lithograph, your offset color print, while we listen to the artist, or if it was a long deceased artist, like Winslow Homer or Mary Cassatt, to have an actor voice their part while they were interviewed.
The idea, you would have this reproduction of a particular painting, and you're going to sit down with you or your family, and you're going to look at it as it's being described and explained in front of you, sometimes by the artist.
It's a great idea, but that could be critiqued too, because think about this. These are the same years in which people like Father Coughlin and Hitler, most famously, would shout out to roaring audiences how to interpret events as well. And a lot of individuals, not just Marxist art critics, viewed this as just another example of Thomas Hart Benton saying what is the America and how to interpret it. So on the one hand, it's very populist and very vernacular. On the other hand, it plays upon nascent ideas about the Volk and the Folk and how to reach them and perhaps to control them. So therein lies, for better and worse, some of the intellectual critique of Benton enlisting radio or publishing or a national art scene to proclaim his America as the America.
It's still a wildly interesting concept, and it was popular.
Very, very popular. One of the reasons I wrote this book, first of all, I'm sort of a wannabe musician from way back when, and Benton himself was a little more than a wannabe musician. He was a self-taught harmonica player. He invented a tablature notation system that was eventually appropriated by Hohner, the musical publisher, and which was used in tutorials and may well be to the present day, but was well into the 50s and 60s. Benton even recorded an album of his harmonica playing with Decca Records.
So when I walk in front of a painting, be it Thomas Hart Benton or anybody, and I want to know more, I wish that I would look at art more critically and know more about it when I see it.
Right.
I mean, and that's, I think, one reason I liked the idea of that radio program.
Sure.
And I know you have audio tours in most museums now.
Right.
But I guess I just wish I would think more about art as I saw it.
Availability and accessibility are criteria, and they should be criteria for art. By being such an innovative and influential educator who believed in the expressive possibility of form, line, color, shape, nuance, scale in its own right, Benton, with students like Pollock, helped legitimate abstraction. The thing with abstraction is that you have a very formalist vocabulary, and you end up talking not about storyline, the narrative, but rather what the forms do with one another. Well, if you walk into an art museum and you hear two people doing that, it can sound like a bunch of pretentious gobbledygook. So I think that, as Crystal Bridges and other museums have done, I think having didactic materials to make culture more accessible, to encourage a more critical and knowledgeable stance before it, is laudable. And that's why Benton wanted to work with the radio. Now, whether Benton's explaining his pictures or explaining his politics, that's up for grabs. I think if you don't give people some type of introduction, they will tend to walk through the Met and just kind of slam dunk it. Like, all right, there's an El Greco, there's a Picasso, all right, let's go have lunch. I think that for students, as they evolve, and certainly for artists, I think finding our own voice. And one of the points that I try to make in the book was that his own personal voice and the voice of others, will preserving those is what his art was mm-hmm. about.
It's interesting because I first saw Thomas Harden Benton when I was a child. I was at a state capitol.
In Jefferson City, I bet.
Yes. And the images were colorful, and they were natural but just a bit exaggerated, some of the sort of angles or movements to my eye. But it seemed instantly likable. Later, I would start reading John Steinbeck, and I had the sort of same experience with Steinbeck's writing. They were kind of about the same people. Steinbeck was in middle of California, but still some of the same sort of simple yet a little bit of a twist. And then I got to college, and I found out many of the professors I had disregarded Steinbeck and Thomas Hart Benton both. Not necessarily thought they were bad, but just not really good.
Serious artists.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That's something Benton and Steinbeck, I suppose, too, have struggled with. Just to take this back a notch, Benton is part of a group of artists called the Regionalists, who purported to depict the regions that they come from. And I'm thinking of Grant Wood from Iowa and John Stuart Curry from Kansas. Now, never mind that Benton spent a big chunk of his career in Manhattan, and Curry and Wood spent a lot of their time away from their native home places. But in the late 20s through about 1938-39, their aesthetic very much matched an isolationist political doctrine of the United States. But as America, of course, became more interventionist, more internationalist in its diplomacy, their critical fortunes would wane. And by the 1940s, of course, it did not mean quite the same to have, as you rightly put it, these very representational, immediately legible, rather easy to follow narratives. It became very tempting to say, well, because they're representational, because they're very simple form, well, they're simplistic, they're simple-minded. And of course, that's not true. Benton, for both better and worse, was deeply committed to ideas of accessibility and availability. That's why, you know, you first saw Benton in a state capitol, this high traffic public locale in Jefferson City. Benton also dispersed of his work through very inexpensively distributed lithographs, as did the other regionalists. But to get back to Benton and Steinbeck, by the mid-40s, by the early 40s, when America is full-fledged involved in World War II, that type of homespun agrarian attitude could be seen as retrograde mm-hmm. by middlebrow and more elite audiences alike.
Well, and congratulations on the prize from the Smithsonian.
Thank you very much.
That's quite prestigious. And,
well, thank you.
And the name of the book is Thomas Hart Benton and the American Sound. Leo, thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Leo Maso is an associate professor of American art history in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas and author of the book, Thomas Hart Benton and the American Sound. The book has been awarded the prestigious Charles C. Eldridge Prize for Distinguished Scholarship in American Art from the Smithsonian American Art Museum. He spoke to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. He'll deliver a lecture at the Smithsonian about Benton in September.